You're listening to Life in Deep Ellum's podcast.
Okay. Jesus.
Jesus.
What would each letter of Jesus' name stand for if it was an acronym?
So there's a couple of Jesus acronyms that I like to use in life when I'm stressed. And one is just eat a sandwich under a sycamore. The other Jesus acronym I like to use in life is when I'm feeling lazy is Justin, elevator stink, you stairs.
Genuinely embrace. Oh, man.
I would have to go with J for just.
Jewish.
Just.
Joyful. I wrote them down. I also use the internet.
Jolly.
E for empathetic.
Enigma.
Every.
Extreme.
Extremely cool.
S for sincere.
Superb.
Says unbelievable. S word. I won't finish that because of church.
Sinners. Unsuspecting savior. It's just every sinner's unsuspecting savior. How about that? I wrote it down before I said it.
Super.
U for unchanging.
Umbrella.
Understated. Humility.
And S for strong.
Sparkling.
Subversive.
Couldn't find any good S words.
And then my favorite thing about Jesus.
My favorite thing about Jesus.
It's like asking like your favorite thing about existence. I just don't know how to answer it.
My favorite thing, well, one of my favorite things about Jesus
is radical grace.
Okay.
His grace.
He did not focus on the Pharisees. He offered an invitation to all people, especially those outside of the buildings.
He was open to being interrupted.
Is his humility.
I guess everything.
Radical grace, because I think we need a lot more of that in society, where we move beyond what we are owed or what we think people deserve and focus on like what grace calls for, which is sort of unconditional love.
Okay.
Speaking of radical grace.
No matter what I've done, no matter what I do today or tomorrow, he died for me and he calls me friend.
The idea that Jesus is at work in our daily lives and lets us take some credit, lets us take credit for it. To me, that's an expression of his humility that every time I think about it, it's always mind-blowing.
Because. Can I say that?
So many of his miracles and things that he did, and just the influence that he had was just, he was doing something and was interrupted. So not seeing that they are frustration or keeping you from doing the things that you want to do, but it's possible, really amazing opportunities that you can affect people with.
Hey guys, those are some of our guys on screen. That was cool, right? All right, my name is Gina Morielli. I'm the kids pastor here at Life in Deep Ellum, and I'm really happy to be speaking today. A tinge nervous, but we're still in our summer series called When I Met Jesus. And it's a great title. It's a very simple title. In fact, before Joel and Rachel left on their travels, Rachel was trying to encourage my nerves by telling me, Gina, it's okay, you know, this series is meant to be, you know, fun. Get creative with it. You know, it's not meant to be super challenging, you know, to prepare for. So, you know, she's trying to lift my spirits, which was great. However, it was very, very challenging for me to prepare for and to think about speaking to you guys today about how, when I met Jesus. Because for someone like me, that simple phrase, when I met Jesus, is packed with a lot. right? There's just a lot going on there. Jesus alone, just his name, just saying that you can meet him. Just my brain gets in the way, and it's really big for me to think about, okay? And here's sometimes what happens, okay? Here's a lot of what happened this week. I will have a moment, a day, a week, however, whatever have you, where Jesus just feels like a lot, right? So I'll say, Jesus, you're a lot for me to accept today. The reality of you as a person in the world and in eternity and all of that, that's a lot. So maybe today I will be satisfied to believe in something really good. Like maybe I could believe in really beautiful, life-giving virtues like compassion or love, you know, these really awesome, beautiful things. And I say to myself, because I can see, you know, even though I can't see compassion, like can't feel it and touch it, I can see that that person is giving compassion to that person. Or, hey, look, there's some love happening over there because I see it. There's this aspect of virtues being seen around me. And in that way, there's this proof that they're real for me. So this is where my brain's going, okay? So I'm going there. This is like a small version of what happens a lot. And so then I think to myself, well, you know, Jesus, so if you're a person, then maybe you are compassion and love personified. Like, compassion has a body. It's Jesus. That sounds great, you know? And in that way, I can believe in you today. I can say, Jesus, yes, because I get it. And that's how I'm getting there. But there's a problem there, okay? The problem is, and this is all inner dialogue, you guys. Sorry if I'm boring you, but this is real. Okay, so this is what's happening. Then I say to myself, that doesn't really work though, because Jesus is mainly himself. Like he is just Jesus. Like maybe someone's like, oh, Gina, she's just a ball of love, or she is just patience, if I ever saw it, or something like that, right? So yeah, sure, Jesus is compassionate, and sure, he embodies love, but he is Jesus. He's a person. He's a separate person, right? This is where we're at. This is our faith. He's a separate person that you are supposed to be able to interact with. You know, like I can't morph him into a virtue and own him as a fact. Because that's not what you really do with people, right? Like I don't know Joel and Rachel as my friends because I've morphed them into an idea. I know them because I've spent time with them and we have memories and experiences and conversations and all of these things, right? That's how you know a person. So this is me coming to prepare for when I met Jesus. And but if Jesus is a person, then it has to be the same with him, right? So this is like a small example of like 2,500 different conversations like this that happen just whenever. At the drop of no reason or because something prompted it. But this is me. This is where I am. This is where me and Jesus are. This is where we've lived for like 6 years or so in that space, in this space where I'm tired because it's tiring to always have a little thought like that. That makes it really hard to accept Jesus as real and then to accept him as someone I know. So it was pretty difficult preparing for this morning, so much so that I have shirked my responsibility onto three other beautiful people who will be speaking to us today. If y'all can come up, ladies, come down. Where you at? Don't hide. I see ya. There you are. And sit on the couch. Yeah. Okay. Now today we are taking some advice from Paul McGinnis from last week. If you weren't here, he talked about easily forgetting our moments with God. And so going through your memories and finding an object to get with that memory, the memory that you have with God. And so these ladies will be sharing an object with you today, and with that object, a story of when they met Jesus. And I'll be interviewing them. It'll be great. Okay, you ready? So, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Hannah, if I haven't met you before. I've been going to Life probably about 7 years now. These lights are intense. I've never been up here, but anyways, I need my shades. I was raised in Wimberley, Texas, which is in the Texas Hill Country. It's where heaven and the hills hold hands.
I like that.
That's our slogan. So, anyways, I grew up in the woods. I wouldn't say I grew up in the country. I definitely grew up in the woods. And at a very early age, I fell in love with, sounds weird, but like dirt. I love dirt. I love soil. I love anything to do with nature. I wouldn't say I'm the type of girl who like hikes up a mountain and finds God. I'm more of just gets dirty and gritty and sweats and finds God. That's just where I meet him. I had an experience when I was a little girl. I was like 7 or 8 years old, and it was something that was very personal to me. At some point when I'm up here again, I'll tell y'all. But in that moment, I audibly heard the Lord's voice. I also felt him physically. And when something like that happens, it gives you this type of faith that's just unshakable. And that's been the biggest blessing of my life. I never had to question who he was after that moment. It made me pretty solid. And ever since then, I've been walking with the Lord. We have a really good relationship. I feel very close with him. And he's helped me be on a path of peace ever since then. So when Gina approached me and asked me to do this, I can talk to anybody, but typically not like this. So I immediately felt like the Lord just said, is it not true? Is it not what our life's been like together? And why don't you just share that? So it's kind of who I am. I'm crazy plant lady. If you've never met one, you've met one now. I have a true passion for plants and a true passion for soil and dirt and working really hard. Those are the things that really make up who I am.
Cool, Hannah. Okay, second thing. What is the object that you were bringing to us today?
It's funny because we were just talking about the regathering. So,
and the story that goes with it.
Yeah. So this last time when I went to, I'm just going to call it church camp.
Just go there.
I had a really horrible week that week, and it was almost every aspect of my life was falling apart in big ways, like bigger than normal. And I couldn't believe I had signed up for this church camp, and I paid money, and I was like, what? This is so not like me. But the time came, I had already committed like a month and a half in advance, right? So I even thought, you know, there's people that want to go, and maybe they want my ticket type thing. But it was just like, no, go. So I went, and the first night we were there, we just ate and like hung out, so there's like no pressure. And that's when I had decided, like, oh, I'm just like super disappointed in God right now. I think I'm just going to use this as like to get to know people I go to church with, and I'm not going to go deeper. And so I pretty much made my mind up that night. And then we weren't forced to really go deep that first night. So I was like, cool, is this how it's going to be? Great. The next morning we have breakfast, we pray. The first like exercise is a 2-hour silent retreat in the woods with God. Yeah, thanks to Rach. So that really immediately put me in this space where like, oh crap, I gotta be in the woods and I don't wanna talk to you right now. I'm mad at you, I'm disappointed. Why do I deserve the things that are happening to me? And I get out there, I start walking, I see a deer path, so I cut left into the deer path, and I'm just like going into this deep, dark woods, and that was kind of like a metaphor to how I felt at that moment. Like, I'm just gonna go down into this hole, and I'm gonna have a fit with God. I'm gonna tell him exactly how I'm feeling. Nobody can hear me. If you did that day, no judging. So I let him have it, and I do feel better because I'm pretty honest with him at that moment. And as I'm climbing out of the woods, which is just another beautiful thing for me, I was just like climbing out, I see like this real shiny object kind of like going in the, I'm going in the direction of the shiny object. So I start looking, and as I get there, I start to like kind of peel away, thinking it was trash, honestly. I thought it was just like a shiny piece of trash. And what it was actually, once I dug it out of the earth, was this big shell. And I don't know where we were in Texas, but we were in Texas.
The other side of Fort Worth.
And I just kind of just peel away a little bit, and then I finally get this whole thing out, and I'm holding it like this, and the entire thing is like caked with mud. Like it's super full with mud. And as soon as I get it out, I have a million shells. So it's just kind of perfect that I find a shell. And I'm getting the, clearing the mud out of the shell, and he said, I found you. It's exactly what I felt like he said. He's like, I found you. Mm. And I was like, what? Ooh, so mad at that moment because he broke me and he didn't care about all the stuff I was saying to him. He's so nice in that way. And I was the shell that day. And he did find me in the woods. And he was cleaning the mud out of me. And it's been a constant story of my life. But in that moment, that's what he revealed to me. The most perfect thing about that weekend was the phrase that was said a lot, which he speaks the language that you best understand. And for me, that was perfect. That was exactly what I understood. And it was very comforting in that moment.
That's my story. Awesome. Thanks for sharing, Hannah. Cool. And you still have the shell. That's awesome. Okay. The third thing that every one of us will be telling you is what our favorite thing about Jesus is.
Like the video before, that's an extremely difficult question, but I think with this story, I think it really just was revealed to me. My favorite thing is that he came in that moment, and he just broke the chain. Like, there was a chain, there was darkness. I feel like the enemy could have kept me in that dark woods forever. And he just came in, like, with a sword. Like, that's kind of how I see him. And he just broke it, and he's so humble and so kind and so precious to take everything that I said to him and then just go, well, that's not you, Hannah. I found you, and I'm cleaning you out. And that's all that's happening here. Don't think it's a bigger thing. It's the reality. I'm making you new. And that, for me, the fact that he does it every day, that his mercies are new every day, is my favorite thing about him.
That's awesome. Thanks, Hannah. Woo! All right. Second contestant. Hello, gorgeous. All right, go ahead and introduce yourself to all of us.
My name is Laura. I am a crier.
Yes.
Against my own wishes, I am a lover of Christ, but I am prone to wander. I am a prodigal child. I am the Samaritan woman at the well, and I am Peter. I am ever sure that Jesus is who he says he is, and I'm also full of cynicism. I am a daughter of Jesus, and I am surrounded by reminders of his grace, but I'm still easily distracted and quick to forget.
Thank you for sharing that, Laura. You're home here, sounds like. Okay, now, tell us about your object or the thing that you brought to give today, to show us today, and the story that surrounds it.
Okay. I'm actually going to tell a little bit about my story first, and then my object or representation of how Christ engages me. So I want to start with when Gina called me this week to ask me about this. And I quite literally felt like Jesus just punched me in the gut. It was completely blindsided me, and I was overwhelmed. And when she posed the question to me about when, you know, thinking about the first time I met Jesus and thinking about how he continues to meet me, I just saw all these flashes in these pictures in my mind of the first time I met him and then how he's met me many times since then. And it was all these pictures of the shame that I feel when I first encounter him. It's just like, it's so clear who I am. And then at the same time, the abundance of his grace. And it wrecks me, clearly, every time. And it's not a condemning shame. This is a phrase that you all have probably heard before, but a phrase that my old mentor used to use a lot called appropriate smallness. And it's exactly that. It's like I come before Jesus and I see exactly who I am and how undeserving I am of him, but I also see exactly how much he loves me and how I'm freed from that. So through the years, to sum it up briefly, ways that God has really, that he continues to remind me of that grace is through music, as well as through my family, specifically my husband and my children. And so I wanted to give a quick snippet of that and that. So I came to know Christ as my Savior when I was around 11, and then about a year after that, my parents got divorced, and I went through a really rebellious season. I was really angry, and I kept believing what I believed about Jesus. Like, I believed he was who he says he was, is, but I was sort of like, I don't know, I was just rebelling. And my mom always made me go to church still. And I remember every time I would go into church that I would sort of steel myself against Jesus because I knew that he was going to try to engage me. And so whenever the music would start, I would just weep. Like, I didn't want to, but I just couldn't because he just got a hold of me in those moments. But, you know, I held myself at a distance and I walked away. Until one year, my mom forced me to go to church camp, and there was so much music. And so eventually, I couldn't walk away anymore. I realized I was miserable outside, away from him, running from him. And the way I see it is I surrendered. And it was beautiful and wonderful. And then fast forward, Josh and I, we grew up in the same church. I was friends with his younger brother. We used to sneak out of church so we could go smoke and stuff in the playgrounds. But once I came back from camp, I didn't really have any friends because all my friends were like bad kids. But his brother had the same experience. So I was like, okay, I'm going to hang out with his brother. So I go over to his house to hang out with his brother, but I realized we actually don't have anything in common outside of getting into trouble. So Josh is upstairs playing music. I wander upstairs. We start playing music together. We're in a band. We become best friends. And eventually, obviously, we got married. So, but through the years, we've played a lot of music together, and specifically in church, and music that's meant to, you know, engage you in worshiping Christ. And that process can be really messy. You know, he'll correct me, and then, you know, I'll get offended, and, you know, it's just this whole messy process. And then on the other side of that, though, is us creating this harmonious sound that, you know, points towards Christ. And again, in all of that, I see all of this grace. I see, you know, because when he corrects me and I get mad at him, he's very just you know, even keeled. So coming full circle, basically, I feel like God used all of these things this week, and He used my relationship with Gina, and He's as I was looking for an object and a representation of this, immediately came to mind for me and Josh to do a song together. And I felt like that was very holistic because it sort of included all of these things and allowed me to sort of like pull Josh into that moment as well, that God had very clearly created at a time when I needed to be confronted with Christ and my own sin and His grace.
Wow. Thank you, Laura and Josh. That was beautiful. Okay. If you had to pick just one, what would be your favorite thing about Jesus?
This is the obvious answer. My favorite thing would be His grace, and specifically the faithfulness of His grace in contrast to my unfaithfulness in pursuing Him and abiding in Him.
Thank you. Another hand, you guys. All right. It's awesome. Okay. Miss Christy.
Hi.
Go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone.
Hi, I'm Christy Soto, and I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and that He died for us, for all of us. And for the longest time, I didn't really believe the last part. Did He really die for all of us? Like, all of us. Even the bad people. And that's kind of where my journey starts. I grew up in a very conservative church. And the messages were more fire and brimstone oriented. And I felt a lot of shame growing up all the time. And when I went to a Christian college, it was pretty much the same. Until I started diving deeper into the scriptures and seeing how Jesus really is portrayed and the love of God. And I started looking at the church and realizing this is not mirroring what I'm reading. And that shame turned into resentment. And I started resenting the church. I would go to church on Sunday and just feel a lot of anger and leaving upset. And I was still there because growing up, I learned I had to go to church, and that was my way to earn my spot in heaven. So I was angry, but I was there. And in comes this object cool. that I brought with me.
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
These
the
are the coordinates of a place in New Mexico called Camp Blue Haven. So this place is called Camp Blue Haven. I'm also talking about church camp today.
What's happening?
I was a camp counselor there, and on my way to New Mexico, it's in Las Vegas, New Mexico, I was feeling this relief that I was leaving the world behind, being disconnected, not having to deal with all the hypocrites. You know, I'm not the issue, it's them. And, you know, driving towards the mountains. And that night when we were doing some sort of orientation, getting to know everyone, there's a person named Joey. He gave a little devotional that night. And before he started to begin his message, he stopped and he looked at the camp director's wife and said, I'm sorry, I can't do this. And he looks at the camp director and he says, you know, me and you are good, but your wife has wronged me, and I can't speak in front of her, not with her present. And we're all just like, what?
Oh.
And she stands up trying to defend herself, like, this is not the time or place. And everyone in the room is just like, what's happening? The girl next to me is crying. I'm thinking, what did I get myself into? And she leaves, and the camp director stands up, and once again, Joey's like, I am okay with you, man. Like, there's nothing wrong with me and you, but it's your wife. I just can't deal with her.
Wow.
And the director was like, but she's my wife. Like, you can't be okay with me and not with her. Mm. We're one. And before the building started, you know, getting on fire, he called scene, and he brought the camp director's wife back in, and she's coming in with a smile, and we all realized this was fake. And
oh, snap.
The girl's still crying next to me, okay?
Oh, my gosh.
It was pretty traumatic.
Oh, my gosh.
But there's a lesson, and it's like the lesson I needed to hear. He starts by saying, you can't have Jesus without his bride, the church. And it was like a ton of bricks just hit me, like, whoa. I mean, I didn't hear the rest of the message, honestly. I was just like, he's right. I can't know Jesus and not know who he died for. And that was the moment I learned about this guy named Jesus. But it was also a moment that I learned about who his bride is and the church, the people he died for. And it was that summer and the summers after that, that through the campers and through the counselors, through the staff members who were pouring in, that I was able to learn more about who this Jesus is, but also learn Jesus taught me who his people are. And it's not something that I've completely gotten rid of, you know, but it's a journey. And I finally learned that I can't have this mountaintop experience without the people. So
that's awesome. Thanks for sharing, Christy. That was good. You had us. You got us. Okay. Awesome story. Next, if you could pick your favorite thing ever about Jesus, what would it be?
I would say his tenderness towards people. I obviously grew up being pretty harsh towards people who weren't following rules or hypocrites or whatever. But Jesus never looked at people, and he still doesn't look at people that way. And he's my example on how I treat people. The way he treats people with tenderness and love. And, you know, he met the woman at the well in the middle of the day when it was hot. He didn't wait for her in the evening or in the morning. He found her when she was the most vulnerable. And to me, things like that really teach me how to love. So I would say that's my favorite part.
That's awesome. Cool. Thanks, Christy. Okay.
All right, Gina's getting the hot seat now.
All right.
Could you introduce yourself to us? Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Okay. My name is Gina Morielli. This is my introduction to you about me. I'm a person prone to doubt currently, regularly, today and tomorrow. To doubt my faith. And I'm a person whose spirit is very well acquainted with that blessed assurance that Jesus is mine. I am always admitting that I cannot know and that I cannot deny what I do know. I have been altogether raised as a Christian person and altogether tossed about by what seems and feels like a diseasedness of unbelief. I opt in for the beauty of grace and still find myself often hiding when I feel ashamed. I feel lost in the dark, but certain that it is the light of Christ that will find me. That is what I wrote.
Preach. Well, that's good. Can you tell us about your object and the story that's behind it?
Yes. My object is found on my brother's thigh. It is hairy, that's true. There's a pine cone and on a branch of a pine tree. And this is my object because I grew up on a summer camp called Camp Good News.
What is the theme here?
Yeah, that is
weird. We
did
not talk before.
Oh, that's true.
This.
I didn't even think about that. It's called Camp Good News, I think still in existence. I grew up there as a kid, and there was a bunch of pine trees there, and that's why Aaron has the tattoo. It's very commemorating of our, well, I don't know, of our time there. But these are my first memories of Jesus, like there at that camp, just like
you know, our parents would just let us go and we would just roam around. And I had talks, you know, at the campfire, on the benches, walking. I just would stop at the piano in the assembly hall and, like, just make music to him, to Jesus. And I would just have these moments that, you know, no one knows about, but I just have them in my memory. And so, also going to share, one of the things I did, the first song I've ever written was written when I was 10 or 11 at this camp, on one of these walks, just walking around. And this is how it goes. I was young, remember that? It is called Thinking About You. Thinking. Apostrophe. Here it is. Thinking about how you died on the cross for my sins. Thinking about how you rose from the grave. You wanted me to live with you eternally. Oh, you wanted me to see that all the time you were thinking about me. You were thinking about me while I was thinking about you just because you cared enough. That part's important. To die for me, you set me free. Now I'm thinking about you, thinking about you, thinking about you. That is verse one and the chorus, not even the whole song. But that's just a good memory, yeah. And it's just these moments, right? Like, I'm just a kid. But that pine tree and the pine cone and all of that just reminds me of all of these wonderful moments with Jesus. Where we just thinking about each other and just hung out.
Love that.
Really.
Love that. Well, what's your favorite thing about Jesus?
Okay. I know this is hard for those of you who can answer or feel like you could answer this. My favorite thing I have to say, and this will sound weird, are his eyes. Because you're like, you've seen his eyes? That's cool. The thing is, though, there are so many times, like in worship and song, even in this room, where, or just sitting, and where I really want to see him, I'm like closing my eyes and I really am desiring that a lot. Like, oh, I want to see your face. And every time, there it is. And there is his face and his eyes. And they're just loving. He is always, they're knowing eyes. He's looking at me. And they're kind. And they're open to me. And he's like ready to see me as for who I really am.
Beautiful.
So yeah. That's my favorite thing. Thank you, Hannah. So, when it comes to Jesus, I have clearly this unbelief-belief thing going on. It's happening. But belief wins out. It has won out. It's winning out. And it wins out. Because my soul has found rest in the reality of relationship. Relationship. It does not find rest in the battle of facts and proof. My soul finds rest in the reality of relationship and the evidence of relationship. Because tangled up in my memories are all of these moments with Jesus, where I've met him as a child, as a teen, into adulthood, motherhood, throughout college. I mean, all this time. And I get it. I realize that experience and conversations and these things do not hold up in the courtroom of the people of America or whatever. In the courtroom of our minds, because it doesn't hold up in the courtroom in Gina Morielli's mind. Like, it doesn't. But because I am a person, a being, and Jesus is a person, these become the facts. because we're in relationship. Get the Bible really quick. I'm going to read. We didn't pass out Bibles, but if you don't mind listening, I'm going to read for you just a little part of some of the recordings of when Jesus had risen from the grave and was now alive and appearing places. A week later, his disciples, Jesus' disciples, were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." And then Jesus told him, "Because you've seen me, you've believed. Well, blessed are those who've not seen and yet have believed." Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. I want to be clear this morning that this morning's goal, this whole thing, the experience that we've had today, it's not about me standing up here and making you feel like I'm trying to prove Jesus to you or even prove him to myself. Like later on, you're like, "Wow, that sermon was awkward. Jesus, Gina was like trying to prove Jesus to herself the whole time." Ooh. That's not the point here, okay? Because belief or faith and relationship are not so much about finding proof as they are about witnessing the evidence. So difficult. In this case, witnessing the evidence of the existence of this beautiful man, Jesus, and not just his existence, but his life-saving presence. So I invited other people to tell us about him, and that's what you should do too. Invite other people to tell you how they met him. Just do it. There is so much baggage there for a lot of people. I get that, obviously. Ugh. Maybe someone's told you that Jesus was someone he's not, you know. But don't give up. I am now happy to set aside my need for proof and get downright cozy in the messy, mysterious evidence of this person in our lives, of this Jesus who is tender, who is full of grace, who meets you and speaks your language right where you're at. Jesus is not who we imagine him to be, and he's exactly who we all hope and imagine someone like him to be. So good. So these are the facts. This is how I meet Jesus. Hearing about the lives of my friends being changed by him. So, since music was part of my story, it is very much a big part of who I am. That's why I was writing songs when I was 10 and singing them and still have all the way up till now. We're going to sing a song together to end here. And this song is a gift to Jesus. It is not Kumbaya, and we're not going to sit in a circle. It's a really good song, and it's very simple, the way that he is when you accept him, or the way that he can be. I just want to tell you, ask you, that while we sing this song, try to imagine his face, or try to imagine that he's real to you. Why not? Just let this time be really free to go there and do the crazy thing you don't let yourself do and be with him. Just sit in that space while we sing. And you know, if none of those things work for you, just dote on him while we sing this song, okay? Always remember that it is your birthright and natural state to be wise and noble, loving and generous, to esteem yourself and others, to be creative and constantly renewing yourself, to be engaged in the world in awe and in depth, to have courage and to rely on yourself, to be joyous and effortlessly accomplished, to be strong and effective, to enjoy peace of mind, and most of all, to be present in the unfolding mystery of your life. Blessings, y'all.